Boker Tov again. Welcome back to those of you who were here before, and welcome to those who have just joined us. It almost pains me to stop everyone from the learning, because this is really the main part, the learning, the fathers and sons of us are learning. But obviously this is not the only opportunity you can do this. This is our only opportunity to hear Dr. Plato, but it is not the only opportunity we have for fathers and sons to learn together. So just a quick few words. Dr. David Plato is an associate professor of law, religion and history at Penn State University, and also teaches at NYU Law School. He was a Tikva fellow in the academic year of 2011-2012 at NYU School of Law. I received his BA in ordination from Yeshiva University, a JD from Columbia Law School, and a PhD with distinction in the Department of Near Eastern Languages and Civilizations at Harvard University. He's a well-known speaker, sought after in many, many different places. His research includes Second Temple and Rabbinic jurisprudence, comparative law, and constitutional history. We'd like very much to thank Torah in Motion for allowing us to share their guest lecture. And I'd now like to ask Dr. Plato to come and please speak to us. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Rabbi Spitz, for that warm introduction, and thank you to Or Chaim for inviting me in, and thank you so much to Torah in Motion. It's been an incredible weekend, hosted by an incredible institution that we know about in the States, and it's great to participate up here, and it should keep up doing amazing projects of bringing mechanchim and speakers out to Canada, and we also learn about such an inspiring community. I echo also Rabbi Spitz's remarks that it's beautiful to hear Kol Yaakov. It's exactly the parshiot we've been reading about, and I feel like I'm getting in the way. People should just keep learning. So if you're going to walk out the door to learn with your father, you're excused. Okay, I want to try to use our time together to get more ready for Hanukkah. And who's better to bring us there than the Rambam? So I want to read the Rambam carefully, and I'm sure a lot of the students here have had opportunities in Shiurim sometimes to review a Rambam, but we're going to do it really in a way that we're going to measure the Rambam's words. Sometimes you'll see in your Shiurim that sometimes your Rebbeim tend to focus so much on the way the Rambam says something, and what order, what exact words, and sometimes you wonder, maybe you're even over-reading a little bit. So that's why I just want to begin with Source 1. Because Source 1 is an amazing statement that the Rambam says about his own mindset when he writes, or how somebody should think about the importance of being precise in writing. Here's the Rambam, Source 1. You ought to know that no one has the right to speak in public before he has rehearsed what he wants to say 2, 3, and 4 times. That's what I was doing outside. Okay, I practiced 4 times and learned it. Then he may speak. This is what the rabbis taught, and took their proof text from the verse in Iyov. Then he saw it, engaged it, he measured it and probed it. Even that's so beautiful how he notices the fourfold formulation in the Iyov. And afterwards, he said to man. So that's if somebody speaks, you have to practice 4 times. Important mussar here for everybody in the room. If you ever are asked to give a Dvar Torah, you got to practice. Says the Rambam, so much for what a person is required to do before he speaks. But if a man legislates on his own and puts it down in writing, he should revise it 1,000 times if possible. Wow. 1,000 times. You would think that's such a high bar, the Rambam would never be able to write anything. And yet, the Rambam is as productive and voluminous a writer as we have. But it shows the level of effort and care he put into his writings. Actually, amazingly now, we found manuscripts with the Rambam's own autographs, meaning original manuscripts of the Rambam. They are housed in University of Oxford's library. Some of them are actually on display right now in New York City. And you see in them how the Rambam crosses things out and revises. If he wants to make sure he gets each line right and each word right. Given that background, I think we should read carefully the way the Rambam ends Hilchos Chanukah, But I want to emphasize at the outset, it's not just the way he ends Hilchas Chanukah, it's also the way he ends his third volume in the Mishneh Torah, which is known as Zmanim. How many volumes are there in the Mishneh Torah? How many different parts to the Mishneh Torah? You can participate. Anybody? Father, son? How many? 14. That's why we call it the Yad HaChazaka, Yid Dalet, 14 different volumes. So the third volume is Zmanim. Okay, so you could look at the sheet, but without looking at the sheet if you haven't, how do you think the Rambam begins his that volume, Zmanim? Where do you think the Rambam begins? The laws of holy days. Shabbos. Why begin with Shabbos? Yeah, people, you can't be shocked. Why not? I'm going to start calling on it. I've been going to school for years. Okay, Shabbos is Doraita. Okay, but a lot of holidays are Doraita. So what else? Why begin with Shabbos? It's frequent. I think that's good. It's Kiyom Tchilahu L'mikrae Kodesh. It's the paradigm of all holy days. It's the holiest of days in many senses. That may be in Yom Kippur, and that's why Yom Kippur is very upfront also in the Rambam. It's the most frequent. So the Rambam nicely begins with Shabbos. And then he gets into the other Yomim Tovim. At the very end, he ends with Chanukah. Why do you think he ends with Chanukah? Why do you think he ends Volume 3 with Chanukah? So that, you know, I actually have to catch a flight afterwards. And it's going to be a little tight. So when I ask questions, that's good. Okay? So that was good, though. It's the most recent, it's the latest of the holidays. It's actually, what's its status? Somebody said before, the Shabbos and Pesach are Daraisa. What's Chanukah? Divrei Sofrim or Derabbanan. So actually, he ends his third volume, his second to last, set of halachas is about, what do you think? Purim, which is the first, you know, the latest within Tanakh. And then the very last holiday that we have, which is also Divrei Sofrim Derabbanan, even more so, is Chanukah. So that's the way Volume 3 is structured. We could actually see it inside in our little chart here on page 2, source 4. Topics in the Rambam's Mishneh Torah Yad HaChazakah Zmanim. He begins with Hilchos Shabbos. Then, of course, he goes into Erevin. Then he goes into Yom Kippur. And all the way through, and at the very end, he ends with Hilchos Megillah and then Chanukah. Okay, so now, if we turn back to page 1, source 2. Here we're going to read the very end of the Rambam, Hilchos Chanukah, but really I think a better way to think of it, at least at first, is the way the Rambam ends Volume 3 of his Mishneh Torah, Zmanim. The Rambam says the following, Mitzvah Ner Chanukah, Mitzvah Chavivahi Ad Ma'od. So this is already a little unusual, because the Rambam's highlighting how special Ner Chanukah is. Hopefully this is going to get us in the mood. We gotta get excited. We're about to do, on Chanukah, lighting the Chanukiah. The Ner Chanukah is a very beloved mitzvah. How beloved? How careful should somebody be about it? Tzarich adam nizaher ba kidei lohodi hanes. Lohosif b'shevach hakel v'hodaya lo al nisim she'asah lanu. And it's also in English below, but I'll translate loosely, that somebody has to be very careful in observing Ner Chanukah, because it's a way of broadcasting the miracle and a way of adding in our praise and our thanksgiving about miracles to God. So through lighting Ner Chanukah, we are broadcasting the miracle and praising, thanking God. Afilu ein lo ma yochal, ela min hatzaka, rahmana l'tzlan. A person is really tight with his wallet, really has no money, needs to borrow tzedakah, shoel o mocher suso v'lokeach shemen v'neros u'madlik. A person has to borrow as much, you know, as necessary even if it, you know, it seems quite extreme, you're really down to that dime, still you have to borrow in order to fulfill this mitzvah. So we thank God, most of us are a little bit more comfortable. We really can't take it for granted. That already is something to think about. Halacha Yud-Gimel. Now the Rambam says the following. Let's say he imagines halachically that you're really tight. You have such a limited budget that you have to start selecting among mitzvahs. That's really hard. We love all our mitzvahs. But let's say you have to pick. That's Halacha Yud-Gimel. Harei she'en lo'ela pruta achat. Filafanak, kiddush hayom ba'alakas ner chanaka. Let's say a person is down to their last pruta. And they have to choose between what and what? Okay, that Shabbos, what about Shabbos here in Halacha Yud-Gimel? Kiddush, and Chanukah candles. Makim liknos shemen lahadlik ner Chanukah al hayayin the Kiddush Hayom. What takes precedent? If you have to choose between Chanukah candles and Kiddush wine, what takes precedent? I need a student on this one. What takes precedent? Chanukah candles. Is that obvious? Not very obvious. But the Rambam explains why. Ho'il b'shnehem midibrei sofrim. It's true, they're both on the same level. They're both scribal. They're not d'oraisa. Mutav l'hadim ner chanukah sheyesh bo zichron hanes. Why does ner chanukah take priority over Kiddush wine, Mark? Because it's a way of broadcasting the miracle, which Kiddush wine doesn't do. Okay? That's true, but apparently Ner Chanukah embodies, is a broadcast more so than Kiddush wine. That's a nice point, but apparently it really broadcasts it in a way, in a sort of public display way, even more so. Halacha Yud-Dalet, Hayalafanav Ner Beito v'Ner Chanukah. So now the Rambam continues. Let's say you're down to your last dime, and you have to choose between, this time between what and what? Between what and what? Shabbos candles or Chanukah candles. Okay. Oh, ner beito ve'kiddush hayom. Or you have to choose on a Shabbos between Shabbos candles and Kiddush wine. Okay. This could happen any Shabbos. You have to choose between Shabbos candles and Kiddush wine. What wins? What takes the ultimate priority? Says the Rambam, ner beito kodesh. What's the most important out of these three mitzvahs, if you have to choose one? Kiddush wine, Chanukah candles, Shabbos candles. The most important is Shabbos candles. Why? Mishum shalom beito. Because we know we light Shabbos candles every Shabbos. Why? Because shalom bayis. Shabbos candles brings peace, harmony into the home. Why does it do that? This is a suggestion. What do you think? Why? In what way? I mean, we could talk about this at length, but just the basic idea. Why do you think Shabbos candle brings shalom bayis? Okay, it involves the entire family. Okay, good. What else? That's fair. Sure, it involves the entire family. Good. What else? Okay, it also, it's not pleasant to eat in the dark. It brings nice, you know, lighting, and it obviously it brings a more positive mood. And it does involve everybody. That's a good point. Okay, good. So all of that brings shalom bayis. So how do we know shalom bayis is so important? Says the Rambam, Shaharei Hashem Nimchach Lasot Shalom Ben Ish Leishto. What does that mean? Can you explain? What does that mean? But I'm going to say, why shalom bayis is so important? Why is it so important?
Hashem is willing to erase his name from the Torah, so that will be shalom.
Okay, what's he alluding to? Rambam. Sota. Here, there's an amazing halacha in Sota, which actually deals exactly with relationships in the home. And it's not a good situation where a husband suspects a wife of not being faithful. So it's a whole bad situation in the home. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, to bring about and to restore peace and harmony within the home, God says, take my name and sacrifice it. Throw it into the Sota waters, even if it gets erased. I'm willing to sacrifice my name in order to restore relationships in the home.
in order to bring light, in order to bring the whole couple together. Let's bring that back into the home. God's willing to sacrifice God's name for that. So it says, Mishum Shalom Beito Sharei Hashem Nimchak La'asot Shalom Bein Ish Le'ishto. Then the Rambam ends with the following beautiful note. Gadol HaShalom Shekol HaTorah Nidna La'asot Shalom Ba'olam. There's one thing you remember for today, you take away this slogan, that's good enough for me. Greatest peace. For the entire Torah was given in order to bring about peace. Sometimes we lose sight of this. That's what the Rambam says, the slogan. What's the entire Torah's purpose? It's to bring about peace in the world. Shene'emar, d'rachea d'arche noam, v'kol netivotea shalom. Its paths are pleasant paths, and all its ways are peaceful. So let's just summarize what we saw in the Rambam. The Rambam says, Ner Hanukkah is very beloved. Why is it beloved? Because it broadcasts the miracle. And it's a way of praising and giving God thanksgiving. Then the Rambam says, let's say you're really tight on your budget. And you have to start prioritizing. Obviously, we never want to do this, but you have to. Rambam says that if you have Ner Hanukkah against Kiddush wine, Ner Hanukkah trumps Kiddush wine. Because Ner Hanukkah is a way of broadcasting a miracle. Now the Rambam says, imagine you have three mitzvahs in front of you. You have Kiddush wine, you have Ner Hanukkah, and you have Ner Shabbos. Rambam says, you know what trumps all of them? Ner Shabbos. Why? Because Ner Shabbos apparently symbolizes even something more compelling if we have to pick one thing. And that is Shalom Bayit. Says the Rambam, Shalom is indeed unique. Because God is willing to sacrifice God's name to bring Shalom between spouses within the household. Indeed, the Rambam ends, all of Torah was given for the sake of peace. That's beautiful Rambam. Now I want to start analyzing the Rambam a little bit more carefully. Because the Rambam is a book of halakha. Right? A book of halakha is supposed to tell you laws. Are there laws here that we just learned in these passages? Are there laws? There certainly are laws. What are some of the laws? What are some of the laws we just learned? We learned some halakhas. Like, you have to borrow money to buy Narkanika. Like, what you should do if you need to prioritize if you're broke. There's some halakhas. But, at the very end, the last line or two, the Rambam is moving beyond halakha, and he's telling you a point of values, of hashkafa, we would say. Of machshava, of hashkafa. What's the point of hashkafa that he's telling you? The great value of peace. How God sacrifices God's name for peace, how the entire Torah is in order to achieve peace. The question is, what's that doing in a Sefer Halacha? It's beautiful stuff, but it's machshava, it's hashkafa. So here, I just want to say a basic idea that people who study the Rambam know, that the Rambam loves machshava and loves hashkafa. The Rambam actually has an entire work, the Mor Nebuchim, which is about machshava and hashkafa. The truth is, in his Mishnah Torah, the Rambam mainly tells you halacha. But once in a while, the Rambam pauses to tell you a point of very basic, invaluable machshava. Actually, frequently, where do you think the Rambam puts the machshava and the hashkafa? Probably not to break up the halachic flow. Frequently, he puts it at the very end of one of his volumes. So we said, over here, we're reading the end of volume 3. About Zmanim, about holidays. So at the end of volume 3, the Rambam gives you a takeaway, beautiful point of Machshav and Hashkafa. Just to show you for a second that the Rambam does this elsewhere, and you really can look it up. It's very beautiful that he does it at the end of almost every volume. But look here at the bottom, page 1, source 3. We won't even read it inside. But here's where the Rambam deals with the laws of Tahara, and the laws of mikvah, a lot of detailed halachas, how to build a kosher mikvah. But at the very end, source 3, turning into page 2, you'll see that the Rambam ends even his detailed halachas, the mikvah, with a beautiful point of machshava. Okay? And you can read it on your own. It's worth reading. It's a beautiful passage. So the Rambam ends almost every volume of the Mishnah Torah
after he gave you all these plethora, these details of halacha, the Rambam ends often with a point of machshav. In fact, I'll go further. Where did the Rambam get this idea from? Where did the Rambam, so far, by the way, not so much questions, so far we're sort of just understanding. Where did the Rambam get the idea to end one of his volumes of halacha with a statement about the great value of peace, of shalom? He got that from the Gemara. Which Gemara? The end of? Of Uptin. Okay, good. That's one place. Where else? Also, that's true, by the way, the end of Mishnayos, but also, actually, the end of a lot of the Bavli Masechta. Look at source 5 here, page 2. This is good. We're moving along. The problem is we have all sorts of questions ahead. But still, let's just follow where the Rambam built his idea from. The Rambam says on the bottom of page 2, source 5, which is not the Rambam, the Gemara. The Gemara ends Masechta's Brahmas. Does anybody here do doc? I've been looking, but I'm sure some of you did. Okay, if not, you should beg your fathers to learn some Daf Yomi with you, or you don't need a Daf. You can do an Amud, you can do half an Amud, even better. Go slower, and take a learning process. Sounds good. So here, in Masechus Brachos, how does the Rambam end Masechus Brachos? Excuse me, how does the Bavli end Masechus Brachos? Amar Rabba Lazar, Amar Barabba Kanina, Talmide Kafami, Marbim, Shalom, Ba'olam. Very famous statement, right? We know this from our davening. Talmidei Chachamim Marbim Shalom Ba'olam, Shneamar, all sorts of verses that talk about how learning Torah on stages should promote Shalom. That's the way we end Masechus Brachos. Turn the page. It's not just Masechus Brachos. Actually, look on top of page 3. How does Masechus Krisus end? Exactly the same way. How does Masechus Nida end? Same way. Okay, Yavamos. Same way. There are 4 Masechtot, at least, in Bavli, that basically end with, also the Bavli, what's mainly in the Bavli? Halacha. And yet, it's very interesting, at the end of the Bavli, frequently, the very end of a Masechet veers from Halacha to Machshava. And in fact, in 4 of the Masechtot in the Bavli, the Machshava is about the great value of peace. In Brachos, Yevamos, Krisus, Nida. So here we see how the Rambam, you see how thoughtful the Rambam is? He modeled himself after the Gemara. Just like the Gemara has much halacha, but the end ends with machshava, so too the Rambam in a volume. It's filled with halacha, but ends with machshava. Just like the way the Gemara in various masechta actually focuses in its machshava coda at the very end on the theme of peace, so to the Rambam and Volume 3 with the theme of peace. Except that here I think some questions begin. Yeah?
So I understand what you're saying there, but at least in Source 1 here, or the first source we read, the Rambam talks about peace, but it seems to be in order to explain the halacha. If you have 3 options in front of you, you choose the Shabbos candles. Why? Because they promote peace, and how peace is so important.
Okay, that might even start to answer one of the questions we're going to pose, so hold on to that thought. But I'm not totally satisfied with that, so after posing some questions, then let's see if there's more of a give and take on that point. But it's an interesting point. Let me start posing some questions. First question is, and this relates really to your comment, if the Rambam is modeling himself after the Gemara, where the Gemara ends several Masechta with Machshava, actually more specifically, with a Machshava on the theme of peace, why did the Rambam really echo the Gemara, right, imitate its exact teaching in the places where it taught it? Like in the context of Tefillah, Masechus Brachos, in the context of, Nida. The Rambam chooses an entirely new place where to locate this teaching about the value of peace. So even if the Rambam is following the Gemara, the Rambam is picking a new location to speak about the value of peace. Okay? That at least is curious. I'm not saying that Rambam is sort of free to author, his set of halakhas, but to the extent where he's modeling, it's just interesting that the Rambam did not totally go with the Gemara. The Rambam doesn't totally follow the location in terms of subject matter, or actually the formula of the Gemara, the Rambam formulates his own original version of the value of peace, and he locates it in a new setting within the end of Hilchos Zmanim, the Halachos of Holidays. Okay, that's one thing, a question to think about. What's going on there? Why does Rambam do that? I have a second question. Second question, I think, is a little bit of a tougher question on the Rambam. What was the proof that the Rambam gave that peace is so valuable in Halacha or in Torah? What was the proof? Sota. Sota is the ultimate proof of the great value of peace. God's willing to sacrifice God's name for achieving peace. Wait a second. If that's the case, so now here I'm sort of getting into the Rambam mindset. The Rambam mindset is that the Rambam wants to stress somewhere the following Machshava point. That peace is of a great value. Now where is the Rambam going to do that? He's not going to do it in the middle of the Halacha. It's going to be at the end of one of the volumes. Rambam, I have a perfect place for you to put this Halacha. Where should you put that Halacha? At the end of volume 4, Nashim, which ends with Sota. That actually is a tough question, I think. Look here on page 3. Source 6. Page 3, source 6. The Rambam, we'll just see this briefly, we're not going to get all into it. I'm just showing you how Hilchos Sota ends volume 4. So look at Perek Dalet, Halacha Yutet of Hilchos Sota, source 6, where the Rambam talks about Imroi Likbot, Liknot, etc. He tells how the husband should be very careful before, accusing spouse of inappropriate behavior, etc. And then he tells you, and he actually ends with a verse, which tells you a certain machshava point. And then you see at the very last words, Brich Rachmana de Siyayan, Nigmar Sefer Rabbi Bezra Shachar. So what do you see here clearly? Hilchos Sota is the concluding halachas of volume 4, Nashim. So Rambam, this would be the perfect place for you to segue into your presentation of the great value of peace. He should have said, because exactly in the context of Sota, we learn that God sacrifices God's name in order to bring about and restore relationships between husband and wife in the context of Sota, which teaches you the value of Shalom Bayit. Indeed, Shalom is great throughout the world. Why wouldn't the Rambam have inserted his teaching right here in volume 4? Why would he put it in volume 3? At the end of Sefer Zman. Everybody get that question? I think that is a pretty strong question on the Rambam. The third question on the Rambam. Where did the Rambam get all these halachas from? About prioritizing between Kiddush wine, Shabbos candles, Hanukkah candles. Did he make that up? Where did he get it from? You have to be Mar. Which Mar? Mar Shabbos. Source 7. Let's look at that Gemara together for a second. Source 7. And here we really got to start reading carefully. Says the Gemara, Source 7, I'm a Rabba. Everybody has to follow inside. It's important. I'm a Rabba. Shita li ner beito v'ner Hanukkah. Rabba teaches us, the Amora teaches us, that shita li is clear to me. That if a person has Ner Beit Tov and Ner Hanukkah, has to choose between Shabbos candles and Hanukkah candles, what comes first? Ner Beit Tov Adiv, Nishom Shalom Beit Tov. What should you pick first? If you only have money, obviously, it's talking about Shabbos candles and Hanukkah candles, if you only have money for one, what do you choose? Rabbi says, Shabbos candles, why? Shalom Beit Tov. Good. Ner Beit Tov, Kiddush Hayom. Let's say you have to choose between Shabbos candles, this is the way most Rishonim understand. Shabbos candles and Kiddush wine. What comes first?
Guys.
Yeah? Ner Beito. Okay. Ner Beito Adit, Mishum Shalom Beito.
So far, what did Rava teach you? If you have to pick between Shabbos candles and Hanukkah candles, Shabbos candles comes first. Why? Shalom Bas. Shabbos candles and Kiddush wine, what comes first? Shabbos candles, Shalom Bas. Why, Rava? Rava asks, Ner Hanukkah Kiddush Ayomahu. Rava asks, if you have to choose between Hanukkah candles and Kiddush wine, what should come first? Should we say Kiddush Ayomahu to Tavir? Should we say pick Kiddush wine over Hanukkah candles because it's Tavir, what's Tavir? It's more frequent, what's the full slogan? Oh, Dilma, should we say Ner Hanukkah Adiv? Should we say Ner Hanukkah comes first? Why? You shouldn't pursue Menisa. At the end, Rava figured out which comes first. Included Ner Hanukkah Adiv, Mishum Persume Nisa. Ner Hanukkah takes priority over Kiddush wine because of Persum Hanes, because it broadcasts the miracle. We just saw the Gemara. We start with the Rambam, now we look back into the source of the Gemara. Is the Rambam the same as the source of the Gemara, or different?
Different.
Why different?
The Rambam was talking about the Shabbos candles, and here it says the house candles.
That's very interesting. So a lot of Rishonim understand that Ner Beito is Ner Shabbos, but that's very interesting. Let's assume it's the same. Let's assume it's the same. That is an interesting point. But let's assume Ner Beito means Shabbat candles. Is the Rambam the same as the Gemara or different? What are we going to vote? What's going to be? Same, different. Okay, we're going to come with not a lot of answer. So nobody heard that. Same or different?
Same.
I'm actually with the same. Same in what sense? In what sense is it the same? Halakhically, substantively, it's all the same. So in what sense is it different? The order. Okay. It's all the same in terms of its substance. But in terms of its order, it's different. In other words, the Rambam, when it comes to the substance of halacha, is really telling you nothing that's on the Gemara. But that's fine, because the Rambam is trying to distill the teachings of the Gemara. But where the Rambam starts to become creative and start to do Rambam things, where he has kiddushin, is in the ordering. You notice that? It's clear. The ordering of the Gemara ends, actually. How does the Gemara end? What's the last statement of the Gemara? Which halacha? What's the last statement of the Gemara? Source 7. It teaches you that what takes it in the presence of what? Kiddush and Hanukkah, and tells you that Hanukkah trumps Kiddush because of Pirsum Hanes. And how does the Rambam end? What's the last thing he teaches you? Then Ner Shabbos trumps because of Shalom Bayit. Which order is a better order? Normally we don't even think about it. It may be to know the halacha, but clearly here, the Gemara presents an order, and the Rambam presents an order, and the Rambam, interestingly, changes the order. So which order do you think is a better order? Remember, we're in the context, what's the sugya of Masech Shabbos? It's all about, in the context, the famous sugya about Hanukkah. Okay? And where's the Rambam? It's true that he's at the end of Seder Zmanim, but he's also in the end of Hilchot Hanukkah. From a Hanukkah perspective, what's the better way to end? What's the better way to end from a Hanukkah perspective? I think the last thing to end when you're speaking about Hilchot Hanukkah is the great value of Hilchot Hanukkah. Look what the Rambam does. So here's question 3 and then question 4. Question 3 is, why does the Rambam change the order? Question 4 is, Rambam, you change it in a peculiar way. Right? Now we get why the Rambam changed it. I think we get it because the Rambam has to end with the theme of peace. But Rambam, look what you did when you changed it. Rambam, you're in the context of Hilchos Hanukkah. In the context of Hilchos Hanukkah, you told us all the halachas of Hanukkah. Two prakim, all the halachas, which a lot of them are about the neighbor's Hanukkah. Then in halacha yibed, here follow the Rambam. The Rambam does it beautifully. Halacha yibed builds up. You should know, after I gave you these halachas, you should know, actually, Ner Hanukkah is special. Don't take it for granted. Chavivahi an ma'od.
Beloved. That's an unusual thing to say about a mitzvah. It's beloved. Then the Rambam proves how it's beloved. He says, even if you're short on cash, wow, that's a little extreme. You have to borrow in order to fulfill this beloved mitzvah, which is a vehicle of broadcasting the miracle of thanksgiving, of praise. Then the Rambam tells you in the next halacha, you know what? I'm going to prove to you how special Ner Hanukkah is. If Ner Hanukkah is facing off against Kiddush wine, what's more precious than Kiddush wine? You know what? Ner Hanukkah trumps Kiddush wine. That's halacha Yud Gimel. Wow, Rambam, I'm really getting it. Hanukkah is so special. Chavivah Yan Ma'od is the way of Zichron HaNeis. It's a unique kind of a mitzvah. It even trumps Kiddush wine. And then the Rambam ruins the whole thing. Don't write books this way. Rambam then says, you want to know how great Ner Hanukkah is? It came second in the race. It's awesome. It finished second. It won the silver. Rambam, that's a strange way to end Hilchos Chanukah. Hilchos Chanukah, so special! Silver medalist. Rambam, go with Rava. Rava, at least, even though he got all the halachas in, he ended on a high note. Ner Hanukkah is so special. Rambam, you tell us, Ner Hanukkah, a lovely, amazing, second best, actually loses to Ner Shabbos. That's a very strange way to end halachas. Four questions, I'm going to review the four questions. Question one. If the Rambam is modeling himself after the Gemara, how come the Rambam doesn't really follow the Gemara? The Gemara has a formula that is all and special and chooses to locate it in various contexts like Brachas and Nida. The Rambam chooses his own place. Why? Question two. In order to make his point about the value of Shalom, the Rambam learns it from Hilchos Sota. But that actually would give the perfect new place to place it at the end of Hilchos Sota, which is at the end of Volume 4, Nashim. The Rambam seemingly stubbornly chooses not to put it at the end of Nashim, but the end of Volume 3's mind. Third question, the Rambam got all of the substantive halacha up in the Gemara and Shabbos from Rava's teaching, but the Rambam strangely reshuffles. Well, Rava's order is not good enough. Has to do it in his own order. Question four, his own order actually is a very anticlimactic way to end Hilchos Chanukah. Because even though the Rambam beautifully expounds upon and extols the singularity of Ner Hanukkah, the Rambam's final statement is, it's so wonderful, it's a silver medalist. And you know what? Something's greater, Ner Shabbos. What's going on? What inspires the Rambam? Yeah.
I don't look at it as it's second, because if you compare Shabbos to the Hanukkah, if you're not allowed to have a light by Hanukkah to carry out light for the rest of Shabbos, because, and therefore you have to have the Shabbos light on, so it's not a comparison.
That's very nice way to say, but the Rambam doesn't stress it that way. That's interesting. The Rambam doesn't stress it that way. So I want to add, but given the way the Rambam so stresses how special Shabbos is and Shalom, and there is Shalom, and there is Shabbos, Shalom Bayit, Shalom Be'elish Le'isho, Shalom Ba'olam. Why does he end that way? I want to take a stab at it in the following sense. Let's look at one other Rambam. At the bottom of page 3. One last source we have to see together. Actually, we have to see source 8, source 9 very, very quickly. We'll look at source 8 for 1 second and then see source 9. Source 8 is a very, very famous Gemara. You've probably seen it at various points. In the same extended sugya in the Shabbos, source 8 tells us, my Hanukkah, what is Hanukkah? What is it all about? So the Gemara quotes Megillas Tanis that teaches us what's Hanukkah all about. The Tanur Rabbanan, B'chafei b'kislev, yomei d'chanukah t'naya inun, on the 25th of Kislev, around the corner, right? There is yomei d'chanukah t'naya inun. There are 8 days of Chanukah. D'lola misbid b'hin, d'lola isanis b'han. 8 days, where we don't have eulogies, we don't fast.
Why? What's so special about Hanukkah? Shefenish nefnesu yibanim laheichal, timukol hashmanin shebeheichal, v'shigav ramachos feis kashmanai, v'nitzum bat, v'gulom nasu ala pachetat shal shemen, sh'amuna pukot amur shal kohen gadol, v'lo yabau ela lahalik yom echad, nase bonis v'hidiku mimenu shmona yam. Shana'achar kabom asu'um yam tovim b'hal avoda. So what does the Gemara say Hanukkah is all about? What's Hanukkah all about? In a word, what's Hanukkah all about? The miracle, is that what you're saying? I can hear you. Happiness, okay, there's some happiness there, but what's it all about? The miracle of the oil. That oil lasts for 8 days. That's what the Gemara says Hanukkah is all about. Now let's turn to the Rambam. How did the Rambam begin Hilchos Chanukah? Everybody really has to pay attention for 5 more minutes, because this is the key. How did the Rambam, source 9, begin Hilchos Chanukah? Let's look at the Rambam together. Rabbi Yishani, during the second Beit HaMikdash, Shemalke Yavam Gazru Seiris Al Yisrael, when the Greeks made decrees against Israel, Ubitlu Datam, and try to eradicate Yiddishkeit, Elohimiku Otam Lasok B'Torah V'Mitzvos, and didn't allow the Jews to immerse themselves in what we're doing right now, learning Torah and doing mitzvahs. Is that the way to fight the Jewish people? To God, their neshama, Upashku Yadam, the Mamonam, U'Zoteyam, and also, attacked their treasuries and attacked their households, the Nifnesu Lehechah, and pierced into the Beis HaMikdash, Upirtsu Bapartsus, the Timut Taharos, and totally contaminated the Beis HaMikdash, Mitzal Lehem Yisrael Ma'od Mitneyam. And it was very bleak, basically, for the Jewish people because of them, because of the Greeks, the enemies. V'lachatsum lachats gadol, who was a tremendous oppression. Ad shirikeim aleihem elokei avokeinu, until God of our fathers had compassion, Hoshiyam miadam, saved us from the hands of the Greeks, Hitzilam, v'gavru bnei chashmonai ha-kohanim ha-golim v'hargum, and the Hasmoneans, the Kohen Gadol, the Kohanim Golim, the Greeks, were able to reverse everything with God's help. And they destroyed the enemies. Hoshiyu Yisrael mi'adam, who were able to save the entire Jewish people by Yehidu Malachim Yehkoanim, Bechazram Alkud Yisrael, Yisrael Matayim Shana, the Korban Hasheni, and they won the war, and they achieved military victory, and they restored the dynasty, and they restored the Beit HaMikdash. How did the Rambam begin Hanukkah relative to the Gemara? Rambam emphasizes an entire halacha of the military victory of Hanukkah. What did the Rambam not get to yet? The oil and the miracle of the oil. Now, of course, the Rambam gets to the oil and the miracle of the oil, halacha bet, halacha gimel. But how does the Rambam begin with Hanukkah? With a long statement about the miracle of the military triumph. I'd like to suggest that's the key to what's going on at the end of Zman. The end of Zmanim is not just a way for the Rambam to end his Hilchos Shabbos and Yontif, but it's also a deliberate way to end Hilchos Chanukah. Because what do you notice in the Rambam? That the Rambam actually inserts original teachings where? In the beginning of Hilchos Chanukah? And in the end of Hilchos Chanukah. What's the original teaching that the Rambam emphasizes in the beginning of Hilchos Chanukah? Military victory. And what's the original teaching that the Rambam inserts at the end of Hilchos Chanukah? Peace. Does everybody see that? Look at what brackets Hilchos Chanukah. Both original Rambam contributions.
One original.
Yeah, but it's all original to emphasize it here. It's all original Daf's idea. Obviously, everything the Rambam is drawing is from earlier teachings and from Chazal. But original to emphasize it here. The Rambam chooses to begin Hilchos Chanukah distinct from the way the Gemara does, in a way that elaborates on the military crimes and focuses on it. And then the Rambam chooses to end Hilchos Chanukah with a statement about the special, unique role of peace in all of Yiddishkeit. The Rambam chooses those as the balls of Hilchos Chanukah. Why? I'd like to suggest that it's clear once you see it this way that the Rambam's doing it deliberately. And I think what the Rambam is saying like this. I'm going to reformulate in the words of the Rambam, but I think along these lines. The Rambam's saying there's something actually unique by Chanukah. Chanukah celebrates a military triumph. That actually is unique, by the way. How many of our Chagim celebrate military triumph, winning a war? Pesach, we didn't win a war. Purim, we didn't win a war. No, we made it out. We didn't win a war. Okay, there were wars. We survived. Okay, that's not the story. In other words, it's not winning. There's not restoration. The Rambam saying what it means to win the war is it means to restore sovereignty. That is not Purim. Okay? You're right, Purim's close, but it's not. Akade Abde Achashverus on it. Purim is not winning a war in that sense. Pesach is certainly not winning a war in that sense. Obviously Shavuot isn't. Obviously Sukkot isn't. Actually, of all the holidays, Chanukah is unique. Chanukah is celebrating military triumph in the sense of that full triumph leading back to restoration of sovereignty. And Beit HaMikdash. Okay? There's only one holiday that fully celebrates that. And Rambam says you should know this. That's important to the Kiyum Hayom. That's important to what we celebrate. But then the Rambam and Hilchos Chanukah beautifully and deliberately, not in an anti-climax, but in a critical, deliberate way. The Rambam says, as great as Chanukah is, you should know that there's something even greater than Chanukah. What's even greater than Chanukah? Peace. As important as it is once a year to have a holiday that celebrates the military triumph, you should always know, even as you're celebrating, that there's something even greater. If Chanukah is one holiday that's about military triumph, guess what? Kol HaTorah Kula is about Shalom. In fact, if you make a diyuk, what's included in Kol HaTorah Kula? That in order to achieve Shalom. Also, Chanukah. Even Chanukah, even its military triumph, has to be a vehicle in order to bring Shalom Ba'olam. Because all of Torah is about Shalom Ba'olam. I think the Rambam deliberately structures, at least I'm showing this out as food for thought. To me, he deliberately wants us to walk away with this Musar Hasda. When you celebrate Chanukah, it's certainly about miracles, and including within that is a military triumph. But you should know that the entire Torah, the entire Halakha, is all about Shalom. And even our military triumphs also have to be about Ba'avi Shalom Ba'olam. I think that's the way the Rambam structures and ends, not just Seder Zmanim, but the liberty and Hilchos Chanukah. Question or two, and then I got to run. Yeah?
But the peace it's talking about is not the peace being talking about. It's talking about peace internal peace. It's not really talking about external peace.
The interesting
that's the peace that's
So what I find fascinating is that the Rambam at the end of Hilchos Chanukah Seder Zmanim actually says both. He says, Chanukah can't annul versus Shabbos can and Shabbos can annul. Why? Because of Shalom Bayit. Then he said the Kadosh Baruch Hu is willing to sacrifice God's name for Lavi Shalom Ben Yisrael Yishtei. But then the Rambam adds one last verse, and he makes this remarkable leap. Gadol HaShalom Shekol HaTorah Nidna Lavi Shalom Ba'olam. And if the Rambam remarkably goes from the internal structure of the Bayit into world peace, and here a last sort of machshavik thought, but this might be a little bit more loose, but we're thinking about, just like Chanukah begins within the Bayit,
And then it's broadcasting the miracle beyond the body. It's so too, I think maybe the Rambam in a very subtle way is saying also the vehicle for peace begins internally and then spreads to world peace. But it's clear by the end he's talking about not just peace in the home, but throughout the entire world. Yeah?
Why didn't he talk about Shalom at the end of Sotha Hanukkah?
That's a good question, because I think there was a different theme, and then you would have to read the end of Hilchos Sotah a little more carefully that he also wanted to emphasize there. The Rambam also thinks he stressed beautifully one theme, and now he has to get to another theme. But that is a good question. Any other comments, questions? Okay, great. It should be a Chag Sameach and a Frelich of Hanukkah, and thank you for inviting me.
Thank you very much.
I'd like to thank Dr. Flacco so much for his words. I know I enjoyed it tremendously. I hope everyone else did too. So the gzerot, some of the gzerot that we all know that Antiochus had many gzerot that he did in Am Yisrael that eventually evoked the merit of evoked the revolution of the Maccabim. But some of them were Mila, Talmud Torah, Pidyon HaBen, and Shabbat, as well as many others. And one of the things that these things have in common is that the Avanim knew that in order to change who we are, they need to sever the tie, the special relationship between fathers and their sons. And that's Mila, and that's Pidyon HaBen, and that's Talmud Torah, and that's also Shabbos. During Shabbat, where we create that special atmosphere in the home. And there are other gzerot that were, there are other gzerot as well, but in my mind these four explain the fact that, prove the fact that the Ivanim knew something that we know, and this is what this is about. The fact that so many of you came out to learn with your sons, and learning with your fathers, I said this is probably the most Jewish thing you'll be doing this entire year. Quite possibly the most Jewish act you will do this entire year. Well, hopefully not the only one. But the most Jewish act that you'll do is to sit and learn with your fathers. Or for you to sit and learn with your sons. Because we as the yeshiva, we act as your shlichim. To teach Torah to your sons. But really the mitzvah of Talmud Torah is your mitzvah. It is your obligation to teach your sons Torah. And you appoint us to do it for you because you, for whatever reason, can't at this moment. But the chiyuv of Talmud Torah is upon you. And the heart of what it means to be Jewish is this continuation. Father, son, father, daughter, mother, daughter. Is the special relationship that fathers and sons can come together and learn. And I pray, and I would charge all of us to not make this a once in a year thing, or twice in a year, because we do it. We all do it again at least one more time. When? What? We all do it at least one more time. No? Let us say that. Okay? We all do it at least one more time, let us say that. But, I would say, don't have it only those two times during the year. I know it might be, for some people it comes more naturally, for other people it comes less naturally. But to be able to have that relationship of a father learning with their sons, or father, mothers learning with their daughters, I said it's probably one of the most Jewish things that you can possibly do, in the fact that your sons, your children feel that they're a continuation, what they are doing is a continuation of what you are doing, and what you're doing is a continuation of what your father is doing. And that takes us all the way back to what we really are and who we're about. And the Ivanim knew this, and they knew if they were to change who we are, they need to sever the ties between fathers and their sons. That's why Mila, that's why Talmud Torah, that's why Pidyon HaBen, and that's why Shabbat. So I would just hope that this not be the only time that you do this, that you find time, and Shabbat's the perfect time, to find time every week to learn a little bit with your sons, learn a little bit with your fathers. And since we do have a little bit more time, to this end, of talking about Talmud Torah and the value of Talmud Torah, we have one more guest speaker, who I'd like to ask to come speak. This is Rav Chagai Raviv. Rav Chagai Raviv is here as a representative of Yeshivat Petach Tikva. Although it's a program for guys, for seniors who are graduating high school, He's here as a representative of Yeshiva, which teaches Torah in Israel, outside of Israel. Rav Chagai Raviv, for many years, was a Ram in Yeshivat Shalvim. Then he taught for many years at Yeshivat Sharem Veseret Zion. He spent a few years as a Rosh Kol Torah Mitzion in Cleveland. And for the last couple of years, he's been the head of the American Tochnit at Yeshivat Petach Tikva. I'd like to ask him to address us for a few minutes, share with us some words of Torah. Again, remembering that the Torah that we teach over here is only the beginning. It continues continues in Israel, and it continues every day between fathers and their sons. Rav Chagai, baksha.
So basically, I want to talk today about one word. And because I'm Israeli, so I want to talk about one word in Hebrew. And the explanation of this word that we find in the beginning of our Parashat HaShavua. Because in the beginning of our Parashat HaShavua, the pasuk says like this. Vayeshev Yaakov ve'eretz megure aviv ve'eretz knan, ele toldot Yaakov. Yosef ben 17 shana ya roe et echav batzon, etc., etc., etc. So what is the word toldot? Ele toldot Yaakov. So normally what is toldot in Hebrew? Or in English? Generations, excellent. Zera we call it in Hebrew. So normally when we say Ele Toldot, it means Zera, it means generations. Michael, what's the problem with this explanation? What's the problem with this explanation? That as I read the passage before, I'm going to read it again for you. Ele Toldot Yaakov, Yosef ben 17 Shana, Hayah Roeh Techav Katon. The problem with this explanation is what? The pastors didn't bring all the children of Yaakov Avinu, just bring one of them, Yosef. In fact, basically, we also familiar with all the children of Yaakov Avinu from the last few weeks parashiyot. Nothing new here. So it's a little bit weird. Even if the pastors would bring all the names, it would be a little bit weird why the pastors need to mention them again. We just finished to read about them so many times in Parashat Vayetzi, all the names and reasons, etc. But besides, the pastor didn't mention the children of Yaakov Avinu, he just mentioned Yosef. So, Rashbam, that normally loves to explain the pshat, tried to say, oh, but in our parasha we found more than just the famous familiar children of Yaakov Avinu, we found new children that belong to Yaakov Avinu, in few aspects. Because the Kadosh Baruch Hu promised Yaakov Avinu, Melachim Echad Atzecha Yetzev. As you know, when Binyamin born, HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised Yaakov Avinu that it's going to be extension to your family. It's going to be Melachim from your family. It's going to be Tal Goyim. And Goyim, as you know, it's plural. It's not just one child. How many children go to Yaakov Avinu since Binyamin born? Maybe just Binyamin. Depends on how big family. If you say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu talk about Binyamin as one of them, or not? But obviously no plural, no Goyim. So Yaakov Avinu is a huge problem now. His second wife passed away. He has just one children that born from there. Since HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him, Melachim Yichal Afecha Yechuru. And who is the children? Binyamin. So what is Tal Goyim? Who is going to be the second one? Who is going to be another child? There's no more other child. So we know the answer. What is the answer? Menashe Be'Ephraim. As Yaakov Avinu told Yosef, your son is my son. Menashe Be'Ephraim to Reuben Be'Shimon Mihem. And they get into Nachalot as Reuben Be'Shimon. Who is the Melachim that coming from Yaakov Avinu? The kids of Yehudah. The sons of Yehudah. They are the grandparents of Gal Galeret, of the Melachim. So basically, how Parashat HaShavua gives us the introduction to the next generation, the grandson generation, that is basically what? It's basically also part of the family of the sons of Yaakov Avinu. So, maybe that's the explanation of Toldot. Say the Rashba, what is Toldot? Toldot is talking about the kids, the family now Parashah, the kids of Yehudah, the Melachim, and the kids of Yosef, Menashe Be'Ephraim. It's really interesting, poetry inside one, I think, major part. Because, as we know, when we read the Parsha, the topic, the continuation of the psukim, almost not talking about these kids. You know, midway to Pasha Be'efi, when Yaakov Avinu told Yosef, Menashe Be'efrag, and Kirun Ben Yishimon, and Yehuda is just by the way in the Pasha, it's out of the topic, you know, it's like a preface in the middle of the Pasha. So to say that all the introductions of the Pasha, Ele Toldot Yaakov, and we know what the Pasha is going to talk about. It's not going to talk about the grandchildren. It's going to talk about totally different story, dramatic story. And to tell that the Pasha started with the word Toldot, just to mention that there is also grandson in the scripture, that's really weird. So you look at the Ibn Ezra. Ibn Ezra explained totally different explanation. And he said, what is mean Toldot? Toldot is not children, it's not generations, it's episodes. It's in the stories. Me'ora'ot in Israel. A back to back. So Ere Toldot Yaakov, according to the Ibn Ezra, it's mean, that's what happened to Yaakov. That is story, that is episode. But then, I have a simple question. You know, what is Chumash Bereshit about, if not that, you know? It's in fact any parsha that you choose in Chumash Bereshit is the same word. Here Toldot Yitzchak, yeah, it's said, but then it's talking about children. Here Toldot Avraham, here Toldot Yosef. Each parsha instead of Bereshit talking about Maaseh, Avot, Siman, Evanim, all the story, the episode, what happened to the parents, to the grandparents, to the Avot. So why do we begin a parsha by Yeshev? According to David Ezra, the Torah needs to tell us, Ere Toldot. That's what happens to them. Oh, great. I mean, you know, it's looked for me as an extra law. That's all Sefer Bereshit. As the Ramban says, Sefer Bereshit, it's Maaseh Avot. What's happened to the Avot? That must seem wise and smile to the children. It's not just Pasha Be'eshev. So why Pasha Be'eshev start with the word Toldot? I think he suggests that the Ibn Ezra wants to tell us out of the explanation. But guess what? Also related to Hannah. I think the idea is missing. What the Ibn Ezra wants to tell us is that you come to Pasha Be'eshev and the next few Pashiyot in Kates, Va'igash, you have a story that basically you have two different ways to read the story. You can read the story from the place that it's happened. From the place of the people that joined the story, that it happened to them, from their perspective. But you also can read the story from the perspective of the person that knows the end of the story, and know the end of the parasha, and know all what it's going to be about. And it's a totally different story. When it happens what happened to yourself, and Yaakov Avinu for 21 years about inside, when you're reading the story as it's happened, it's one story. If you're talking about Joseph between brothers, and Yuchemet Achim, and father that was his beloved son, and maybe he was preferring the little than the other kids, and it's a lot of family politics, events, issues, who knows what? And it's a lot of sadness and happiness in the hand. That's the story when you read it as it's happened. But if you take a step back, looking from the historical perspective or from the knowing the future perspective, knowing what's really happened here, it's something different story. You're talking about the beginning of the Galut, the promised by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Avraham Avinu. You're talking about a totally different approach. And Pasha Menashe is full with this insight, small words that give us exactly these messages. That's so Richie pointed. That for example, in Pasha Be'eshev, you find a person that called the Hayish. When Yosef going to look for his brothers and come to the Khan, he found Kish. And also Richie said, why say Kish? Why did you mention the name, you know? Why Kish? Said also Richie, because maybe he was looked like Kish. But it's really represents the idea that the Kodesh Boku organized something here. It's something much, 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 much deeper. Then Yaakov can see in his eyes. What Rashi said about this pasuk? And the Kadosh Baruch Hu said, let's see what's going to be with his dream. You know, with each pasuk in this pasuk, Rashi writes to the natural. And it happened,
whether history or future perspective, the big picture perspective, the 3 notes really definitive. It's something different. And maybe that's exactly the reason why Tarshad Vayeshev started the whole talk. Because if I want to tell us, you need to understand the trick, the message, the challenge is to be able to read the Tarshad Vayeshev from the broad perspective, from both dimensions, and to understand that that's the story of the Jewish nation ever. That you have something that you can read in the news, and there is something much deeper that HaKadosh Baruch Hu claimed here. We are not a simple nation. We have not simple land. Read in the news. From last week, few weeks ago, few months ago, what happened in the Middle East, you know? Small countries, so much portions in any newspaper, you know? Strong, it's impossible to believe, you know, what's happening in Egypt, in Syria, and who knows? But the message of our Parashat HaShavua, of the world Todot, telling us, hey, remember, as a Jewish nation, we always, always, always have two dimensions. The simple chart that you can read in the newspaper is something that can show us. We are living the history and the future of the Jewish nation. And we build it daily basis. And we don't know how it's going to happen, but we believe that something is being. It happens in any article that is written in this paper. And it's our responsibility to feel the mission, to feel that thing, to feel that we are doing this, or we are doing something so big. In the small thing, the small advertisement, small thing that can find the papers. It looks like Todot. But it's really building history, building future. Each day in Eretz Yisrael, in Am Yisrael, it's always like this. That's our history in the nation. Starting the world so good, it's not good. It's not cheap. It's a famous Maharaj, and I'll ask him, and I finish in 2 minutes. I don't want to lose too long. Then I'll ask him why. Because now we just mentioned the nest of the Milchama. And we didn't mention the nest of Pacha Shemen. The Maharaj said basically the miracle was the Milchama. But you know why we need Pacha Shemen? Because when you see the Milchama, you can think, we had a lot of Milchama in our history, you know. Am Yisrael always fight against enemies. And thank God for the help of us. Matzvim, Yagam, Kodov, Adol, Kavim, Adol, Kavim. People has to show can admit it is something much bigger, much deeper, much higher. And I have a lot of things in here to carry in one hand. It's not like a regular fight. It's not like a regular battle. It's not like a regular place that Kavim Shvoku Am Yisrael to survive. But it's something much bigger. Like the miracle of the Shemen saving our life, because it's not remind us. It's just for a book. But there is something much higher, much bigger. If we are taking part in so responsibility to remember and to understand what it's asking us to act. Thank you.
I'd like to thank Rav Chagai Raviv as well. Anyone who would like to stay and continue learning is welcome to do so. Anyone from grade 12 or grade 11 who would like to speak to Rav Raviv about the new program in Yeshivat Petach Tikva, the American program in Yeshivat Hesder Petach Tikva, he'll be here and is welcome to speak to you. And for everyone else, Yom Tov, V'Shavua Tov.